Tuesday, August 21st, 2007, Upon Further Review, episode number 45. Now, we know that this show is a bit late. It's been a couple of weeks since our last episode, and we want to apologize. But you guys know how it goes out there. I mean, there's so many things to review. There are so many things to weigh in on. There's so many possible opinions that we could give that, quite frankly, Clea and I got a little bit overwhelmed. But fortunately, we don't think this is going to change the quality of the show. Because as you all know, like fine wine, opinions simply get better with a little bit of age.
Stop messing with me. You're not missing a thing. You keep going and I'm just showing that I never stop to think.
All right, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And we want to welcome everybody in to episode 45 of Upon Further Review. We are closing in here, Clea, in the towards the end of the summer. We're not there yet, but I think it's okay to start. If I start seeing a couple of back-to-school commercials, that's, you know, I'm cool with that.
You're not going to be as bothered.
No, I, you know, the fact that, as I've said previously, you know, the fact that you have, like, 1 week after the kids get out of school from high school, and especially in you know, elementary school and stuff like that, and then the next thing you know, it's just like, you know, now, what do you need for back-to-school? Literally, like, a week later is ridiculous. But
yeah,
now,
you
know,
your
it's like that stuff.
Perception is somewhat stilted.
Yes, but not really.
But yeah, Greg got upset with me. Was it earlier today or yesterday when I told you I had felt kind of a little bit of fall on the wind?
And I'm like, no, it's August. Thank you. Although I should say that this summer has been a lot cooler, generally speaking, than the last summer was, which,
told
you know,
you.
Which
little
is all right.
Ice age.
You know,
we're going to have a mini ice age.
Oh, great. Which is a good thing.
I've just told you.
Okay.
That's all I'm trying to say.
You're like, yeah, mini ice age.
Remember, if any of you have seen our Norwegian video.
Yes, and we hope all of you
Norwegian
have.
Video, we go into the Glacier Museum.
Yes.
And we come out, and Greg asked me what I learned. And what did I say, Greg?
And you said that we're going to have some little ice age.
No. I said that the thing I learned is that global warming is okay because we're going to have a mini ice age. Because global warming caused mini ice age.
Which I don't think was the point
survive.
Of what they were saying.
Right, that's what you said.
Right.
You remembered what you said.
I remember what I said. I blocked your comment out of my mind. So anyway, we want to welcome everybody in. We had more listeners last week, so that's great. We're continuing to build our audience, and we very much appreciate that. Please continue to spread the word and tell your friends. And this week we have, as usual, 3 things that we're going to be reviewing, all of which were, well, that's not true, 2 of which were submitted to us, and then 1 of which we chose. First of all, we're going to begin by reviewing pizza. This comes from our friend Mike, who is now living out in the Seattle area. I believe we've talked about him before on this show, and he's commented many times. And so he sent us this thing about pizza, and he said in the email, being in New York, you guys must have lots of choices when it comes to where to get this dish and what the proper toppings must be, slice count, do you call it a pie, me being from the South never did, etc., etc. So Mike gave us a suggestion and we will take it on. So we're going to talk about pizza. Then we are going to move on to talk about something that we were looking for something major to review, and I had been thinking about this, and so I suggested it. And we are going to be reviewing Star Trek. Clea and I are both big fans, and we're going to be...
I don't know if I feel comfortable calling myself a big fan compared to other people out there.
Well, no, see, I didn't say we were Trekkies. See, there's like fan, big fan, and then Trekkie. And Trekkie is absurd over the top. Neither of us are Trekkies.
Absurd. The word absurd, I think, implies judgment, Greg.
That they make?
No, I think that implies that you there's
honey, these people walk around wearing Klingon outfits.
Not all the time.
Yes.
But it's okay if they want to dress up every once in a while.
Yes, but I'm just saying those people are over the those people are not just fans, is my point.
Okay,
people are
I'm
over the top.
I'm just trying to say you might want to watch it on the calling them absurd.
I mean, I'm saying absurd over the top like they want you to speak in Klingonese and they get annoyed when you don't. You know, that's what I'm talking about.
He's not getting it. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about Star Trek. And then we're going to move on from there to talk about another thing which was sent to us, submitted to us for review by one of the creators of this podcast. And that is the Hawk and Dove podcast. I believe the full name is the Hawk and Dove Political Punditry Podcast. And he asked us, the person who's doing this, in fact, actually is a graduate of Second City, which is kind of an improv comedy group out in Chicago. And he says in his email that we've been nominated for a podcast award in the political category, although we're really satire. We put the pun back in punditry. So he was firing out the jokes even on the intake.
Even within the email.
Even within the email that he sent out. So we're going to finish with our review of hawkanddove.com.
Before I liked what he said, though. He says, hey, further reviewers.
That's right. That's right. So we're kind of like...
That's hello, further reviewer. I guess you don't say a pun.
Well, no, you wouldn't.
For the reviewers.
For the reviewers who was a pawn or something. Like, you'd have to see, so I don't know.
Thank you,
but
English
but we appreciate the official. Yeah, well, I have no idea. I've never thought of it that way. So we want to appreciate, so we appreciate him sending that thing for review, and we will finish up with that. And I also want to very briefly mention, we still have some other emails that people sent for items for review, including one that was sent to us about music and stuff like that. And we will get to you, and we will
patient,
get to your stuff.
Grasshopper.
So it will happen. And please continue, everyone else, to send us review suggestions. We appreciate them, and as you can see, we actually engage in them. So let us move on to our first review item of the day, and that is pizza. And we took a look here, and I hate to send people to this website because it's GeoCities, and GeoCities is one of the worst designed website setups ever, but if you go to www.geocities.com/heartland/flats/ you know what? Don't even do this. Just put pizza in Google and look for the history of pizza. And this is the website you get, okay? I'm not even going to send you there. But we were looking here on the history of pizza. And what it says is that technically, the first pizza that existed may have gone back all the way to ancient Egypt, Greece, and Rome. They
Doesn't
all ate
always
things that
go
are
back to ancient Egypt.
Yeah, well, because they ate things that are very similar to our modern pizza crust. Like, you know, it says, the Egyptians celebrated the pharaoh's birthday with a flatbread seasoned with herbs. And Herodotus, a Greek historian, described Babylonian recipes that are very similar to contemporary pizza crust. And then pizza, it says, became sort of what we understand to be pizza in pre-Renaissance Naples, which was a large city in central Italy. And then it has a headline called The Feared American Tomato, which I think is amusing, but I won't go into that, just because I also understand the feared American tomato, not liking tomatoes. But anyway, so okay. Pizza is great. I mean, I think that everybody can agree. It's very hard to find someone, I think, who doesn't like some form of pizza, right?
Were you watching that little bit of an excerpt? I watched, what's it that show with where it's like D-list stars losing weight,
like Celebrity Loser or something? Did it have like Screech on
fat,
it from
the Fit Club, Celebrity Fit Club?
Yeah,
Celebrity Fit Club. I think we watched like a little bit of one episode,
mm-hmm.
and remember they interviewed one woman and the panelists or something were talking about, I think it might have been like the therapist, I think they have like a therapist nutritionist or whatever, and they were discussing with, she's like, you know, you really do have like an addiction to pizza. And she's like, yes I do. She's addicted to pizza.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a lot to like, you know?
There's a lot to like. You got
pizza.
Bread.
You got cheese. Who doesn't like cheese? And then you've got tomato sauce. Now, I should say, I think you need to put them together in a certain way. I think some people get this idea that if you just take a hunk of bread, throw it, like, on a dish somewhere, and then you just put some tomato sauce and then, like, you know, sprinkle a little bit of cheese on it. No. First of all, you cannot overload. The technical basic elements of the pizza are bread, tomato sauce, and cheese. That's the basics. But to really make it work,
which is a classic Naples
pizza. That's a classic Naples pizza. But to make it work, number one, you need to make sure that you have enough cheese. These people who are just like, oh, look, it's tomato sauce, and then there's lots of five cans of tomato sauce.
You should stop right there, Greg.
I mean,
because anywhere past you go with that, you're going to go for personal preference, Greg. Some people like your crust thin. Some people like them fluffy. And I watched a little bit of this one. Shows how much TV I watch, unfortunately. There was, I think it was on the Food Channel or something like that,
yeah,
with your mom. And they had a pizza tossing contest. So they tossed pizza. They did all these different things with pizza. And then one of the contests was that they had to actually make a pizza.
Okay.
And they had judges who were like professional pizza connoisseurs.
Okay.
And one of them, you know, showed...
How do people get these jobs?
I don't know. They eat lots of pizza.
I mean, that's awesome.
And so they were showing like the pizza crust from the side when it was cut and said, do you see the bubbles? Like, he described the science to it. Because, of course, cooking is a science.
Sure.
But so you have the people that like the different kinds of crust. Then you have people that like the different kinds of tomato sauce. And for me, I am one of those people, and I think probably a lot of people, if you don't like the sauce, you're not going to like the pizza. Like,
that's fair, sure.
I'm usually one of those people that likes like a really like hearty crust, but I've had flatbread crusts and I've like surprisingly liked them because everything else worked.
Mm-hmm.
So that works. But if you don't like the sauce,
then it's not going to work.
I can't imagine you would like the pizza.
One of the things that you brought up that I hadn't thought about before, but it really, pizzas are perhaps the most significant common food I can think of where the combination and blending the ingredients is so important.
Right.
Because I think, you know, the sense that, and that's kind of what I was getting to, was that when it seems as if basically they were just like, here's bread, here's tomato sauce, and here's cheese, and they didn't think about how they would work together, that's a problem. For example, some kinds of cheese will work better with certain kinds of tomato sauce. And there will be certain toppings that work well with different versions of tomato sauce and everything else. Not to mention, sometimes you can combine cheese and tomato sauce with the use of like a sparing amount of garlic or a certain amount of, you know, paprika that I've seen or something like that. That really can tie the stuff together. But if you use kinds, you know, condiments, not condiments, if you use spices that don't fit very well, that's going to make it seem as if basically the person was just like cheese plus bread plus tomato equals pizza. And it's not true. Yep. The pizza has to be more than the sum of its parts.
Well, it's
thank you.
But I do think people, because again, they'll think it's kind of like a junk food. Some people try to get away with stuff. Mm-hmm. I have this really awful story. There's this awful, awful little deli in the basement, in the first floor of my office building. And they have a pizza oven there and they make pizza every day.
Okay.
And one of the programs on my floor ordered pizza for all her staff. And they got it up and they were like, it was like rancid. It tasted awful.
Ugh.
So you have to be careful. Mike mentioned the whole thing of being in New York is true. You have to be careful because you can have pizza places on every corner.
Right. Well, here's the other thing, too, about that. In New York City, there is sometimes the attitude that New York City has that is, well, I mean, it's New York City. We're making you a pizza. So obviously it's going to be getting
exactly.
up. The fact that you just exist in New York City and happen to have a pizza oven does not make you a great pizza place.
Don't show up to New York City and think you're going to go and buy a bagel and it's going to taste good.
Right.
Don't show up and just think you can go to corner pizza place and you buy this huge slice of pizza for a dollar and think this is going to be good.
Right. Because one of the things that I noticed as far as sort of regional variations are concerned, and I don't, you know, Mike, you can give us some information about this out in Seattle. Clea can also give us some information from what she remembers about pizza in Seattle. But as far as the two major places I think of for pizza, you think of Chicago, where you had the Chicago deep dish pizza. That's where Pizzeria Uno was originally founded.
And that's, I think, a little bit more Midwest is where they call it a pie. I don't think they call it.
Yeah, I've never heard.
Some places that call it a pie, but I don't know.
Growing up in Connecticut and in sort of the tri-state/New England area, I never heard it referred to as a pie. Later on I did. But in Chicago, you know, you get these sort of like deep dish. It's a big thing there where you have the big thick crust and all that kind of stuff. Okay. And in New York, I think that one of the main things you can say as a generalization is that New York tends to provide these huge slices.
Right.
Like New York, you know, when I grew up in Connecticut, you would get a slice of pizza was like, I don't know, a slice of pizza. Like you could slice a pizza into, you know, 8 slices, let's say, and it would be a reasonable thing. And we would sometimes have like, you know, 3 slices would be a meal.
Right.
In New York, a slice was like 2 regular slices in Connecticut. It's absurd how big the slices are.
Right.
Like Star Trek Over the Top absurd. Do you know what I'm saying? How big those pizza slices were.
Nice attempt at a segue.
Yeah. So it was really like, it's just crazy how big the slices are. And I often think that, you know, the quantity is trying to compensate on occasion. Now, there are good pizzas in New York.
That's America, let alone New York.
Right. But like, you know,
bigger's
but New York
better.
Sort of has it straight up and has it in your face all the time about how you always get these big slices. So.
Yeah. No, California and the West Coast, Seattle is kind of a little bit more into the more avant-garde. I mean, that's where like California pizza, you got more of like white sauce.
Calamari type pizza, right? And things like that.
Like the white sauce and like the garlic where it's like barely any, there's not really any sauce. It's like an olive oil topping.
Yeah.
A big thing in Seattle is Pagliacci. They are a chain in Seattle and they have okay pizza. I like them more for their salads. But so, yeah, every you know, little area does seem to kind of have their little theme. But I do think one of the great things about pizza is it can be completely individual. It allows you to make something. It's like a sandwich, you know, in that regards. You can make it however you want to.
Mm-hmm.
It has the basic foundation upon which you can kind of build and make whatever you want. And I also kind of like the social interaction of it, and that someone might have never tried something and say, try this, and then you get this great idea of things that combinations you'd never thought of.
Well, it's true, and it's a good I think Clea's right that it sort of bridges the gap between individual things and group things, because you can get, you know, lots of times you'll have people, oh, let's just get a pizza, and then you get like, I'll have half mushroom and half sausage, or half this or half that. Like, it's one of the few foods that vegetarians and non-vegetarians can easily agree upon just by splitting. thing. Right, exactly. So isn't it really brings together really people. It's, this moment of joy was peace was brought to you. But, so it's really good. Just one thing I wanted to make sort of, and I just would be interested to hear about this from listeners. Does anybody like anchovies? Like anytime I hear people talk about...
Yeah, some people like anchovies. Definitely.
But a lot of times I just hear people like, blah, 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 everything but anchovies. Da-da-da, anchovies. Not anchovies.
It is kind of an interesting like, you know? Social thing that's like... there's somehow, I mean, I can't imagine in America that very many people have anchovies, and yet it's like this thing that people always talk about. Pizza, they think anchovies.
Yeah.
It's so funny. But I did have anchovies on a pizza once.
And?
I was in Czechoslovakia, and my father and I could not read the menu, and so we ordered a pizza, and we had no idea what was on it, and it had anchovies. And all it is like a salty, kind of crispy thing. It was fine.
Communist.
So I would recommend people to communists. I don't think it was communist at the time, actually.
Oh, okay. That joke doesn't work then.
Yeah,
oh, well.
It's okay. It was a nice try. So I think people should, you should give it a shot.
Well, you should definitely try new things. I mean, that's true. Clea and I have tried. I mean, I didn't start having, you know, ham and pineapple pizzas until I met Clea. I've had those sometimes.
Oh, yeah?
My favorite pizza, sort of the wheelhouse pizza, is the extra cheese and sausage. Clea
it
doesn't
always
like...
always gets extra cheese.
I love extra
and I'm
cheese.
I'm fine with that. That's
well,
okay.
Part of that is because I feel that in a lot of cases, if you don't get extra cheese, you don't get the right amount of cheese.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times they're just sort of like, you know, card, you know, crust plus little tomato sauce and then a couple sprinkles
some
of cheese.
Some people don't like it though because they think the cheese like overpowers it or like
which
melts
can be an
all
issue.
Over the place.
I'll admit that can
greasy.
Be an issue. You probably couldn't get away with that everywhere, but it's something to think about.
The best pizza I ever had, client of my dad's, came back from Chicago and brought back a frozen pizza. It was a frozen deep dish pizza from Chicago. I have no idea where he got it from. I guess some famous spot. I haven't been able to find it since. We heated it up in the oven. It was the best pizza I ever had.
All that in a bag of chips, huh?
I didn't even need the bag of chips.
Okay, well, there you go. So as far as a rating for pizza?
Well, it can be really, really bad for you.
That's true.
We have to acknowledge that.
Cheese,
cheese,
crust. And then you have the Pizza Hut
carbs.
Stuffed crust where it's like, have more cheese and more cheese.
Oh, you know, the I have to
too.
See, being a crust person, Pizza Hut crust.
Yeah, I like Pizza Hut
oh
pizza too
God.
As a
it's
chain type of thing.
Slathered in butter.
Yeah, I know.
Six?
Ooh, I would have gone a little higher than that. I would
seven.
Have said a seven because the potential
I'm
of pizza.
Seven. I wanted to say seven.
Yeah, I'd say a seven. And the other, the fact you can get white pizza and stuff like that. Of the chains, my favorite is Pizza Hut. But Pizzeria Uno actually makes a good white pizza,
too. You know where the worst pizza I ever had was?
Where?
Italy.
Really?
Yeah, it's the worst pizza I ever had.
They're like, why you don't like it?
Huh? Why you don't like it? We know how to make it.
It's
the pizza.
A good pizza.
Yeah, no, maybe okay. I just ordered the wrong place.
All right, so good thing for us to review. We like it. Check out and have some pizza. It's good. And 7 out of 10 for pizza.
All right.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its five-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
All right, the second thing we have for you today, ladies and gentlemen, is Star Trek.
Just
and
as probably monumental as pizza.
I would say, right, just as significant as pizza.
In our culture.
Right now, Bernadette is just like, I can't believe it. I swear this is connected, Bernadette, I swear. Is Star Trek, and you can find this at StarTrek.com. Now, if you have been living under a rock... you still will have heard of Star Trek. I find it hard to believe that anyone who's listening to here doesn't know what this is. But just sort of, I'll quickly summarize it. This was a show, a TV show, that started back in the 1960s. It was invented by a guy named Gene Roddenberry. And it quickly became a phenomenon. The original series actually only ran for three seasons. A lot of people don't realize
despite that. Despite being quite popular, correct?
Well... it always had kind of middling ratings, like medium ratings, but then they would want to cancel it and they would get these huge letter writing campaigns to save it. And that happened on two occasions. And also seasons were longer back then. Yes. So you could get a lot more episodes in. But the original was only three seasons. And then they had a bunch of movies that happened. And then the Next Generation came in, Star Trek The Next Gen, which was in the 80s. And that was huge success.
Well, the movies didn't come out until late 70s, early 80s, right?
Right. 77, I want to say, was the first one. That was the original Star Trek. Then you had The Next Generation that came in the 80s. Then you had Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which was a little different. That wasn't a ship. Well, I'll explain in a second. Star Trek Voyager and Star Trek Enterprise, and that finally got canceled, I think, in 2005 was the last season that that ran. The basic premise of the show is always sort of has been sort of the same, with the exception of Deep Space Nine, and that is that you have this crew that works for the Federation of Planets, which is this allied group, and it's set in the future, and they basically go around, and as the original series says, to boldly go where no man, the Next Generation fixed that too, where no one has gone before, and their job is to basically seek out new life and new civilizations. And it was called sort of a wagon train to the stars, basically, is what it was, kind of like a space western almost.
Right.
And all of the subsequent series followed that model, except for Deep Space Nine, where there was a base where people went to. And I, frankly, now some people like Deep Space Nine. I always felt that kind of took away from the show a little bit, because I thought one of the great things about Star Trek was you were exploring, whereas in Deep Space Nine, it was just, you know, there.
Waiting for the exploration to come to you.
Right. But I know a lot of people who say that Deep Space Nine is one of their favorites. That's cool.
Right.
But this has been an absolute phenomenon. The movies are huge. I think they're up to something like 9 or 10 movies at this point. The amount of like cartoons and games and comics and conventions and, you know, internet sites and role playing. I mean, just an incredible amount of attention paid to it.
Fan writing, fan movies.
Yeah. I forgot the books. Yeah. The books and all this. I mean, it's just, it's a huge, huge deal.
Not to mention that you have... two generations of kids that were raised with it.
That's right.
And a number of them inspired by the science and the exploration of it, the creativity of it, to go on and actually become scientists that legitimately actually try to integrate their knowledge of the Star Trek world into the science, and went on to create and to discover amazing things in science. So it actually did
had a real impact.
It had a real impact.
Yeah, in fact, Clea and I watched a show once where we saw some of this. Like, for example, those of you who have heard about the CyberKnife, which is kind of this laser that is sort of used for specific cancer treatment, was designed by a guy who was inspired by Star Trek. Literally, he's like, I loved the idea of this tricorder, which is this medical thing that on Star Trek they used to sort of scan the outside of the body. And he thought, wouldn't it be great if we could do non-invasive stuff like that? And he was inspired by that to create this. I mean, he flat out says it. And there are many, many examples of that sort of thing. And so Star Trek was really inspiring in that way. It was also inspiring because, especially in the original series, it was a source of real harmony and really sort of pushed the envelope. It was the first show on which there was an interracial kiss. Mm-hmm. It was the first show in which you had a major African-American character. Correct. The first show where that was the case, you had a major African-American character, a major Asian-American character. You had a Russian, you know, character on that show. And remember, this is in the 60s, so you had all the sort of Cold War stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So it was an incredibly innovative show, partially because of his optimistic view of the future. That doesn't mean that Star Trek was, and I think sometimes it gets a bad rap, because it doesn't mean that it was just, oh, everything's hunky-dory. I mean, there were a lot of thoughtful episodes that were sad, but the overall premise...
We saw how they had to struggle to maintain...
Right.
Hope.
Exactly. But there was always this premise that it's not just going to be everything's going to fall apart, which to me is so refreshing, because if you watch so much of science fiction today, it's all this sort of matrixy, oh, everything's a disaster and it's post-apocalyptic and it's this and it's that. And that's so tired. And Star Trek was one of the things that I really liked, in part because it was different. It had an optimistic view of the future.
Right.
And also the writing was really good and thoughtful, and they tackled serious issues. They tackled, you know, there's this one episode on the original series, which is my personal favorite because I grew up watching that. And I grew up watching black and white rerun episodes, okay, people? I didn't grow up in the 60s. I'm just letting you know, I saw this 10, 15 years after the fact is when I started watching as a kid.
His family is cheap.
Yeah, right. But there was an episode called Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. And there are these two characters on there that are basically, one is pursuing the other because of this destruction of his home, because he feels like he did all these things to his home planet. And basically the only difference between these two characters is one of them has black on the right side of his face and white on the left side of his face, and the other guy has black on the left side and white on the right side. And that's the only difference. And they talk about, the one guy's like, well, you can see how he's got to be inferior to me because of this, that, and the other thing. Now, you may think to yourself, oh, well, that sounds, you know, that's kind of an obvious thing. But it wasn't obvious when they were doing this back in the 1960s. Mm-hmm. In fact, Nichelle Nichols, who played Lieutenant Uhura, who was the African-American communications officer, was told by no less a personage than a civil rights leader, I believe Martin Luther King, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not positive about that, but I know it was a major civil rights leader who told her to stay on the show because she was such a, you know, inspiration to African-American women. And so a very, very powerful show in that regard. And Clea, I think her, your favorite is probably The Next Generation, right? Which came out in the 80s.
I think a lot of the people our age grew up with the Enterprise, Star Trek Next Generation. What was that podcast that we reviewed where they were big Next Gen fans? And
Love, Long, and Prosper.
Back, they were going back to watch
to the original
all of the
series. Yeah,
we should tune in again and see where they are, because they've probably gotten through the whole thing.
I think they
now.
Yeah, no, I've checked in on them occasionally. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I grew up with Next Generation, although my mother was a huge Star Trek the original fan. But whenever I saw the original, it just kind of seemed kind of corny and odd to me. And the first, I think the first season of Next Gen seemed pretty corny to me, and I wasn't overly interested. It wasn't until the following seasons that I really got into it. And then once I started being with Greg, I did become a little bit more expected. He did provide me some experience in the original, and you get to see it kind of in a different light, that it isn't quite as campy all the time that you might have thought of, and that it actually is. It does have some nice acting and does have some nice themes.
Yep, and in some ways, Next Gen could sometimes be a little bit too complex for its own good. That didn't happen usually with the first show. Now, right. Now, granted, special effects, not getting the job done in Star Trek.
Well,
you know, the bouncing foam boulders and things like that. And also, there were some shows, I mean, there were sometimes, there's this one episode where they're basically getting attacked by flying omelets. Like, that's not, yes. You know. But having said that, on the whole, I think there were some really important themes that then were carried forward into the Next Gen. And I mean, and people know Spock and Kirk, the first officer and captain from the first Enterprise. William Shatner is still on Boston Legal, which we reviewed earlier in the show. Uh-huh. And then later incarnations have had famous actors as well, notably Patrick Stewart, for example, who is the captain of the show of the Enterprise in the Next Generation. So.
I watched, I think, maybe one episode of Deep Space Nine, so I'm afraid I can't really do that justice.
I've watched a few of them.
I found it boring. Voyager, I wasn't quite interested in when I heard about it, and then my cousin was a big fan of it, and she said, no, you really should look to it. And so I kind of watched a little bit of the last couple of seasons here and there, and I did like it.
Yeah, Voyager's not bad.
It did have some great themes.
First female captain, for one thing, on that show.
Yep, and then the Enterprise, I think I saw a part of one episode. It would have to have been really awesome to come back after so many years.
Well, and the other thing was, they were making Enterprise into a prequel, and sort of like what happens beforehand. And the problem I have with that is, it's kind of like, you know, when you're used to the technology of the transporter,
right,
and the phaser, you don't want to see things like, oh, here's what we do before we have the transport. I'm like, no, I don't want to see that. Like, I want to see the future, right? So this doesn't help me.
Yeah.
And I think that I also felt, the producers are the ones who canned The Next Generation. The show was doing incredibly well. It was incredibly popular. And they canned it because they wanted to move on to movies. There's a lot of discussion that the producing group that did Next Gen and Deep Space and Voyager and Enterprise, all of those, that they kind of fouled it up in the way that they handle it. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that probably there's a few years that have to pass before we come up with another Star Trek. I just think they need to give it a little bit of a breather and then think about coming back with it. Although Clea and I did see that there's a new movie due out either this or next Christmas called Starfleet Academy, which is going to be where all the, sort of think of Muppet Babies, right? Like,
yeah,
it's young Kirk, young Spock.
So thinking about that. Oh my God, that's so funny. That's exactly what
Star Trek Babies. Logical Captain.
Because we just saw something of like some guy that was going to be Scotty, and I was like,
I can't hold it together. It's going to blow, Captain. Like, I don't.
That's so funny.
If you
have not seen Muppet Babies, you
seriously. This will all make sense.
Oh my God.
But
Muppet Babies,
I think it's had a big impact on society, and I use it as part of my fantasy fiction class, where I teach it, because it's a really fundamentally important thing of science fiction. And if you haven't, the other thing I want to mention quickly is the conventions, because
have you ever been to a Star Trek convention?
I have once.
I've
been to one convention, and it was weird. I mean, granted, I've been to fantasy conventions and things like that before, so I mean, mean, there's always a group of people that are a little eccentric, and that's fine. That's fun, and I like that. And it's fun to have some Star Trek people around. However, the walking around in Klingon doesn't bother me. I remember, though, being at this convention, which was in Connecticut, and walking around this hotel lobby looking like the original script for some movie. And this guy came up, he was like, Usapada Human, Ashabikasa. And I was like, So I started to laugh it off. I'm like, haha. And he got mad. He's like, no, it's a hose, blah, blah, blah. He was like seriously annoyed. And I was like, I cannot speak Klingon and I will now leave. Because I had this image he was going to pull out one of the shock blades or whatever they call them, and I was going to be in trouble. So
yeah, I mean, that's not cool to force it on other people. I think it's all great if you want to do that. Just don't force it on other people. I went to one. I've only been to one. It was in Bellevue, which is outside of Seattle. I wasn't bothered by people walking around. I just kind of found it boring. They have speakers and, you know, unless it's like someone really great, which I think Uhura was at ours, so it was fine.
Yeah, this one they were having the doctor from Deep Space Nine. I'm like, no.
Right. Not interested. But then they like will have the auctions and things. I mean, it just kind of, I don't want to wait in line just for an autograph. So, I mean, you have to be, I think, a real fan to really get into it.
Right.
And really get the joy of it.
But it's worth going to see one of them, though, I think.
Yeah, it's worth going to see. Although I think it kind of falls into the same thing that we've talked about with respect to like medieval festivals and stuff like that, where we kind of don't like that fantasy and sci-fi gets clumped together.
Right.
And unfortunately that happens with fantasy, medieval, you know, we went to a medieval fair and people walking around like Klingons. Okay, that's not medieval.
Not medieval.
And then the same thing can happen, you know, when you're at a Star Trek convention where all of these different kinds of sci-fi get clumped together. And then you might even have someone, you know, walking around, you know, looking like an elf or something.
Yeah, I love Star Wars, okay? But if I see a Jedi walking on the bridge of the Enterprise, what? No. That's not happening. Like, Spock giving a Vulcan nerve pinch to Anakin,
it's another opportunity to, guess, dress up and probably is expensive to put
that's true. That's true.
Together,
and there's actually a movie called Trekkies, which is about people who are really, you know,
yeah,
Trekkies
really,
being
didn't
a sort
like
of
that.
Super
it came out
fan.
With the second one. I saw the first movie.
Oh yeah.
And people, I guess, were big up in arms. I thought it was fairly fair.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that I really, to me, people who, you know, paint their faces and go to, you know, sub freezing temperatures in Buffalo to cheer for the Bills, I don't see what makes those people, you know, cool and jocks, and what makes people who dress up in Klingon outfits nerds. Like, I don't see the distinction. To me, it's what you're interested in and it's what you're into. I happen to like sports and Star Trek, but I think it's very creative and very imaginative, and although the episodes and the shows were not perfect, a significant part of culture. I would give Star Trek myself an 8. I don't know what you would say about that.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. So an 8 out of 10 for the Star Trek franchise, and if you haven't seen any shows, go check them out. They are cool. Okay. The last thing we have in the docket to review tonight is the Hawk and Dove Political Punditry Podcast, and you can find this at www.hawkeanddove.com.
I'm starving and I haven't eaten lunch. I just can't do a show if I haven't eaten lunch.
Didn't you have some of the crudité in the green room?
Crudité is not lunch. It's crudité.
All right, let's order lunch.
Tell me you're not hungry.
I'm
always hungry. Yeah. I eat recreationally.
Well, then let's order lunch.
Let's get it over with so we can get to the
speech. We can't debate until we order lunch, so let's order lunch.
Okay, let's order lunch.
What do you guys want?
I'd really like a veggie burger.
Where are we ordering from?
Yeah.
And do they have that?
Yeah, there's the McVeggie.
Well, are you going to go to McDonald's?
Well, I know, I'd rather sit here and debate.
Well, then we need to have something delivered.
All right.
You have a bumper sticker on your car that's against McDonald's.
Yes, it says McMurder. How about Domino's?
Oh, no.
Fine.
No.
What?
No, Domino's. Domino's supports abortion. Domino's supports the pro-life movement. They are owned by a hyper-conservative person. I cannot eat Domino's pizza. That would be an ideological nightmare.
Okay, well then, you pick a place.
All right, let's get some Wahoo fish taco. I can eat that.
I don't like fish.
I can't. I'm allergic to tortilla.
All right, Myron, where would you like to eat?
How about Subway?
I can do Subway.
Subway sounds great.
They don't have cheeseburgers at Subway, do they?
No, but they do have some hot sandwiches. You can get an Italian meatball.
I want a Kobe burger. Have you had a Kobe burger?
No, I haven't. No, I don't eat meat.
I love Kobe burgers. I don't know what they do. I think it's all the massaging that the cows get. But they're really, really good, and the meat's really, really tender.
And as I said, this was submitted to us by this guy who I think is actually plays the role Dove in this podcast, who, along with a couple of other people who do the show, are Second City graduates, which, as I said, is an improv group. Mm-hmm. And all of the podcasts are basically, each one's normally about maybe 9 minutes in length, 8-9 minutes in length from what we could tell.
Yeah, eight. Right.
First of all, mad props because they use WordPress and PodPress, which is what we use as well. I think their website's a little, you could find maybe a more interesting WordPress version to use. Yeah. But I think, you know, it's fine, it's functional, and I certainly love PodPress. So, but the show basically is supposed to have Atticus Dove from the left and Brick Hawk from the right debating right. about various issues. And it's moderated by this guy who I think his name is Myron, who's supposedly like this national, it sounds like the National Public Radio type of guy, but he's in that basic, you know, version of things. And they talk about like Alberto Gonzalez, and they talk about abortion and things like that. And the whole thing is designed, yeah, Myron Bunkerling, thank you. And the whole thing is designed to be satire, basically.
Yeah. I mean,
satirizing
all these characters
Crossfire
are,
and things like that.
All of these people are characters. It's not real.
Right.
And they've gotten up to, what is it, 19th episode?
Yes, I believe so.
We listened to a few of them.
Yep.
One of the ones we listened to was the most recent. We tried to get an idea of how
to
they're
one on,
sounding now.
Listen to one on Gonzalez, listen to one on Iraq.
And so. I have to say that actually, this is sometimes rare. Sometimes we finally listen to a podcast. The first couple episodes were really great. And then towards the end, it looks like they might have been petering out a little bit. This one, we actually liked the most recent one, the best.
The best,
I think.
Yep.
Because it was, maybe because they dealt with the least. It was the funniest and it dealt the least with actual politics. I don't know. But I have to say that, you know, I would presume the concept would be is that they're kind of making fun of the left. They're kind of making fun of the right. They have caricatures of both sides. However, being someone a little bit on the left, I do actually find that they don't do complete, in my opinion, justice to making it equal. I don't think, at least in the ones that we heard, obviously their liberal stance is coming through. And the guy on the left, although sometimes silly, overly vegetarian and health and, you know, nature conscious, it does get points across that he's trying to
He just
to
comes
make.
Across as more rational, and maybe it's easier to be funny when espousing conservative positions. I don't know.
No, because I don't think there's instances where Hawk wasn't even, Hawk is on the right, doesn't even really get out an opinion. He's too busy kind of making the joke, while at least Dove will get opinions in.
That's true.
And then make them funny.
That's a good point.
And so
that's a good point.
At least the ones that we listened to didn't actually seem like both sides. And I thought, I don't know. I was kind of hoping that it would actually be making fun of both sides.
I think it's very, very difficult to do political satire and do it well. I think that's one of the reasons why The Daily Show has been as successful as it is that it's so unusual in a way. Because otherwise, you get political satire. I don't know if everyone's heard this, but you may have seen an ad for the Half Hour News Hour, which is apparently Fox's response to The Daily Show, and is stupid. It's not funny.
Well,
and
it's
not even a political issue. Like, I've seen part of the trail, you know, sort of the clips, but I actually watched one of the shows. I saw one of the shows.
You didn't tell me that.
I saw it on YouTube. And it's dumb. I mean, and I don't know any other way to put it. It's not even like I can watch it and go, oh, I totally disagree with it politically, but it's funny. It's just not funny. It's Ann Coulter makes jokes that are obvious. Dennis Miller makes stupid jokes about SUV.
Ann Coulter is on it?
Yeah, Ann Coulter. And it's like
Dennis Miller has totally fallen to the bottom.
Oh yeah, well, he said that. Oh yeah. He jumped the shark a long time ago.
Okay. Anyway,
but
I was trying to say is that as an aspiring comedian, from the little experience that I have, it's hard to do political humor, I think, because it's hard. First of all, you always have to stay on top of things because things are constantly changing.
Right.
But also jokes quickly become done.
Yep.
They've already been done.
Yep.
And so it's really, really hard to not say a joke that hasn't been done in some way, shape, or form.
Yep.
Okay? We got it. Bush is stupid. We got it that he's incompetent.
Yeah. It's so easy to target at this point. There's really nothing
right.
else
so
to be
that's
said about
the thing
it.
That I think with the last one was so funny is that they're kind of talking about a political economic issue, but what's funny is their caricatures and their interactions and their randomness.
Right, because this one guy, the moderator in the show, wants to go eat, and then they can't agree about what to eat because of their various political positions. Like,
right.
The one guy doesn't want to eat vegetarian because he's from the... You know, that kind of thing. And I agree with Clea that part of what it is that it leads to more subtle humor. Like,
right.
I was reminded a little bit listening to this of Extruding America, which we reviewed previously. But Extruding America, I think, is more successful in part because it's more subtle. You know, because it's not just sort of like and here's a joke about babas, and here's something from the right. Like, I think my two major complaints that I had about this were, number one, I thought it was a little too obvious at times. Number two, they have the Saturday Night Live disease, I think, which is the you can't let a joke go. This happened in one of the shows we heard where Brick Hawk starts making comparisons to everything Alberto Gonzalez. And he starts making a comparison about how Alberto Gonzalez is like Fredo from The Godfather. And then he just does The Godfather thing over and over again. And again, it's like the Saturday Night Live thing. He beats the joke to death. And it's just not funny after a while. I had a complaint with that.
I think that they could be strongest if they would choose these big themes and or small little out of the way news or political ideas.
I agree, yeah.
That are not hot in topics.
They're at their best when they're kind of, when they're not sort of constrained by the obviousness of the issue.
Yeah.
In a way.
And in that way, it doesn't have to be, you know, timely. It doesn't have to be something that everyone's talked about and everyone's told jokes about, or so broad a subject that mainly what you'll get is just, you'll get to, it will be a foundation upon which you can see the differences in their characters. So I think that they should be careful and not actually choose some of the topics that they have been choosing, like the Iraq War and Gonzalez and things like that. I think they should kind of go along a little bit more with the last one that we saw, which we heard is abortion.
Which is not really about abortion, as it turns out.
Right.
It's about these other things.
But then do things like little teeny minor political things happening in small little cities or towns or something like that, that are kind of off the beaten track, that then they don't have to kind of compete with that overall issue that can happen.
I also think, just in terms of the overall audience of the show, I mean, who are the people that are likely to listen to this? You would presume people who are technologically savvy, people who listen to, let's say, our show, a lot of people who may be familiar with things like The Daily Show. And if The Daily Show continually scoops you, which it's just going to do, right, because it's every day, and you guys are, you know, they're doing their show every couple of weeks, by the time they get to an issue, as Clea said, it's already been done. And it's already been done even in a satirical way. Mm-hmm. Now, they've been nominated for a 2007 podcast award in the political column. And I think these guys, I mean, I do think they're funny. I think they're obviously smart. I think they've got a good concept. Mm-hmm. But I think just the subject matter is a little bit limiting. And in part, it's limiting because I almost feel like they feel forced to be directly political when they could be a lot more subtly political, I think, and get stuff across in a more effective way. Not to say that the show is bad. Some of it's funny.
But it's well edited.
Yes.
Well, technically, it was very strong.
Yep.
Well acted.
Yep.
The timing was quite good.
Yep.
The production was quite good. So I
think you could tell they're Second City grads. Like, that's clear.
They obviously know what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think they just need to be careful with this, if it's going to work.
With the content and everything else.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. What do you want to say for rating?
Seven? Six or seven?
Yeah, I was going to say six or seven. I'm really kind of in between.
It's one of those, every once in a while we get stuck with a podcast where we can see the potential.
I'd say
I mean, it's pretty amazing, too. You know, I have to say one thing I didn't mention. It really is like 8 minutes. 8.5 minutes.
Yeah, I'd say it's seven.
And I think that is
quite tight. I mean,
quite stunning. It's quite tight. They get a lot in there, and then you're done. And so that was quite good.
Yeah. So I'd say a seven for them. And as I say, we liked it. We just thought that the content could be, you know, a little bit more subtle,
it's
and the content could be more modern.
Have to be careful with.
So.
I'm sure they're probably aware of this and have struggled with it and are working on it.
Yeah. So a seven for the Hawk and Dove Show and the Hawk and Dove Political Punditry Podcast. And thank you guys for submitting it to us. We appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is going to do it for us for this week. Again, thanks to everyone for your submissions. Thanks to everyone for listening.
Saber won.
Oh, yeah. And Saber won, so you think you can dance. So again, all of our powerful influence,
you guys
brought the influence home. And she actually thanked upon further review, and we said thank you. And she said she was sending us the money from her winnings. So we appreciate that. But congratulations to Saber. Thanks to you guys for listening, as always. And keep sending those suggestions in, and we'll get to the ones we haven't yet. We will get to you guys in the subsequent shows. And I think that's it.
Yep.
Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
Talk to you next week.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.